Marin Municipal Water District, E-Bikes Community Advisory Committee, Meeting Number 3, November 12th, 2019.
Our august committee members, your microphones are turned on, and we will record the meeting as we always do for, well, I guess posterity's sake and the meeting minutes afterwards. We'll get started in just a couple minutes.
We need more members.
Also, if you guys didn't get an agenda, there's a stack of agendas there. We've got some supplemental material. I didn't pretty pass them around for those. And then if you want to make a comment at the end of the meeting, there's some comment cards there in the meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Point that towards you.
Why? Because it'll break the camera?
Do you have that back camera on? Or?
Oh, it's already a pen here.
What's that?
There's already a pen here.
Projector. Is it?
What'd you say?
That's right. Do you guys want that projector on? We can turn that on, too. Is that a little better?
Can I give you one?
Yeah.
Do we have enough?
Yep.
Okay,
good.
Oh, okay. We'll wait for Nona to sit down.
Almost.
What? We bring the water to the peak up here?
Yeah, we can get another one.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. I was stuck on East Lydale, and I thought, oh, I'm never going to make it.
I know. I was worried about traffic, too. You never know nowadays.
From Park School out. Camped.
Yeah. Well, I think you made it. Sure. Just in case I have a coughing. Oh, and look at it. It has the logo on it. Are those available to your customers?
Sure. Where is it sourced?
Local.
Local. All right. Craft water.
No. Vodka.
So he's one of those guys.
Good evening. Let's go ahead and get started. For everybody's benefit, my name is Crystal Yesman. I'm the Facilities and Watershed Manager here at the Water District. Thank you once again for joining us for our e-bike Citizens Advisory Committee. This is our third meeting. Third of eight. I believe we're going to have eight meetings. And our last meeting was in the warehouse, so it seemed like a lot less people, but now that we're crammed into this smaller room, it looks larger. So we'll consider future meetings if we're going to continue to have such a crowd. But again, thank you for taking your time to join us and to discuss the issues of e-bikes. I just want to acknowledge we do have one of our board members here tonight, Larry Bragman. Is in the audience listening in on the discussion. And we have some water here, logistics, there's restrooms down the hall that are available for your use. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to Sam. Sam McGill is our facilitator from California State University, and we'll get started with the agenda. We will go out and look for a few more chairs and bring them in as we get going, in case more people show up.
Great. Thank you, Crystal. Welcome, everybody, and thank you for your continued participation in the Marin E-Bikes Community Advisory Committee. We have a couple of advisory committee members who weren't able to make it today. I know Ellie mentioned that she was ill, And I believe Robert Mittelstadt may be out of the country. But as Crystal mentioned, this is our third meeting of eight, and things are kind of starting to pick up the pace. I'll be asking the advisory committee members throughout the day for a couple of specific homework items. We have some additional activities coming up that go outside of the meetings, and you know, as we start to reach out to the broader community and receive input directly from you on some work products. I'm going to start with just a very quick round of introductions from our advisory committee members, since we have such a great public turnout. So if you wouldn't mind just very quickly stating your name and what brought you to the committee, that'd be wonderful. Crystal, we already know when. Sierra, if you wouldn't mind. And sorry, just one other thing. As you're delivering any comments throughout the day, and this goes for members of the public as well, please make sure to use a microphone so that everybody can hear. Thank you. Sierra
Salen. I'm a Marin native. I ride my bike wherever I can because it's a whole lot less irritating than driving just about anywhere, especially during rush hour. It took me probably 35 minutes to get here from Fairfax on my bike, and it would have taken me at least that long in a car this time of day. I carry tools, I carry all kinds of stuff on my bike, but there's no way to get around without a car a lot of the time, but I do what I can on a bike, and I think it's a great way to go.
Thank you, Sierra. Jonathan?
What did you need? Again, this is not working very well, but what did you need?
Just a quick introduction.
Boy, Jonathan Freeman, and I do a lot of nonprofit work around the county, and right now I'm on the law library board.
Thank you, Jonathan. Gail?
Gail McMillan. I'm a retired social worker, and I'm just doing volunteer work now in a local state park and wild care.
Thank you.
I'm Nona Dennis, a 60-year resident of Mill Valley, 60-year hiker on Mount Tam. I was for 25 years, I was an environmental consultant, and since I've been retired for 20 years, I now work a lot with the Marin Conservation League as a volunteer.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Abright. I'm a retired art professor from the College of Marin. I've been mountain biking for 35 years. I'm now riding an e-bike as I've found it enables me to continue my ride with my friends.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Hi there. Robert Eichstead. I don't usually hide behind a tribal affiliation, so I think those of you who know me. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, I'm Sean Horn. I'm the Watershed Resources Manager with Marin Municipal Water District.
Wonderful. Thank you all. Okay, just very quickly for members of the public and the advisory committee, our agenda today is fairly packed. You'll remember, for those on the committee, that we reached out to all of you to ask for additions to this topic today, as well as the schedule moving forward, which I'll get into. Today's meeting is going to focus very much on environmental and physical issues relating to the district's roads and trails management plan, board policy 7, and how e-bikes may or may not fit into that those documents. So we'll spend a bunch of time. We have Dave Davies here from ESA Consultants. They work with the district on a number of different issues, but he's here to talk a little bit about some of the environmental and physical issues. We'll also give all of you time to ask questions of him. Then we're going to move into a presentation on a potential watershed user survey. You'll hear me give this pitch a number of times, but if you think back to the assessment interviews that I did with all of you, one of the suggestions that came up was doing a broader survey of people who recreate in the district's watershed, the idea is to survey them and sort of take the temperature of their feelings about e-bikes, bike policies, and recreation in general. It's not intended to be kind of a statistically significant, scientifically rigorous study. We're really just trying to get additional information from the general public for all of you as you start formulating recommendations around the use of e-bikes on watershed lands. Again, we'll walk through the survey and take questions and comments from the advisory committee. we'll have just a very few minutes to walk through the meeting outcomes from this evening's discussion. And then, as Crystal mentioned at the beginning, we'll wrap up, as we always do, with public comment. We have a great turnout from members of the public today. If you are interested in delivering comment, we have about 15 minutes at the end. I would encourage everybody to fill out one of those pink cards in the back if you're interested in commenting. And you can just hand those to Sean or myself throughout the agenda, and we'll make sure to get to you at the end there.
Sam, do you want to just go over what's in the packet real quick with everyone?
Yes, yeah, that's great. So for members of the committee, you have packets in front of you that include the agenda that I just walked through, a draft of the potential user survey. It's just a front and back document. Many of you have received this via email. Hopefully you had a chance to take a look at it. And then you have a couple of articles that we'll discuss later. Later in the agenda, there's one titled Mountain Biking, a Review of the Ecological Effects. This is from Calgary University, obviously in Canada. And then an additional article entitled Environmental Impacts of Mountain Biking, Science Review and Best Practices. And that was a study and literature review conducted by IMBA, the International Mountain Biking Association. I believe they have the presentation as well in their packets, so you can follow along with those if you're having any difficulty seeing. As always, these materials will be posted to the website following this meeting in advance of the next meeting.
The other document that you have in your packet is the board policy number 7, which we'll review briefly as part of Dave's presentation tonight, too.
Great. Thank you, Sean. All right. Very, very quickly, I wanted to walk through the schedule. We've sort of been setting the stage for today's discussion in the first two meetings. As I said, we're kind of starting to ramp up a little bit. We're here on November 12th. Again, the goal is to discuss e-bikes and the physical, natural, cultural, and social environment of Mount Tam, and then the user survey discussion as well. One thing you'll notice, and it was certainly reflected in the comments that you all provided back to us when we asked for input on the schedule, there's a lot here. There are many things to discuss. The cultural and social component of recreation use and e-bike use specifically, we're going to touch on that today, but it's really going to roll into the user survey discussion. And then we'll focus on it even more at the December 10th meeting when we start talking about e-bikes in relation to other user groups. So I just wanted to kind of flag that as an issue. If we don't get to it tonight, that's not because it's fallen off of our agenda entirely. There's just too much to talk about in a two-hour period here. One thing that at least the committee members haven't seen before, at the request of several of you, we've been trying to schedule an e-bike demo. Not everybody either in the community or here on the advisory committee itself have had the opportunity to actually ride an e-bike. So we've been working very closely with the Marin Bicycle Coalition and members of the Ranger staff here with the district itself. And we were able to lock down December 4th from 3 p.m. To, I believe, 5 p.m. for a demo ride that's going to be scheduled at Lake Lagunitas. And we will be, of course, sending out email follow-ups on that so that everybody knows exactly
what time
to go.
Is that?
3 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay.
We wanted to do it a little bit later, but we realized with the season changing and it getting dark so much earlier, we had to bump it up in the day a little bit. So hopefully folks are able to join for that. The next full meeting of this group is going to be on December 10th when, as I mentioned, we're going to start talking about e-bike users in relation to other user groups. And it's our hope to also present, if the committee would like to move forward with it, user survey results at that time. As we move into the new year, we're going to be talking about safety issues in January. On February 11th, we'll start to talk about regulation and enforcement protocols more. And then the last two meetings, and these are really kind of the capstone for this group, we want you to all start putting together recommendations based on everything you've heard in these meetings. We want to have a focused discussion of pros and cons and, you know, actual formation of recommendations. And then finally, in April, the goal is to take everything that you've discussed so far, put that into a final report, and get your thoughts on it in April. I don't want to spend too much time, but did anyone have questions about the schedule? I know the December 4th date is new to all of you.
Where did you say that might be?
Lake Lagunitas is what the ranger staff has proposed, but we are certainly open to other locations if there's a better.
I have a bit of a conflict.
Okay. All right. So at this point, I'll hand it over to Dave for his presentation. And Dave, you wanted to take questions from the committee throughout the presentation, is that right?
Sure, we can do that.
Okay, great. So while Dave's presenting and you're chiming in, I'll be charting over here and getting all your questions down on the flip chart. So, Dave.
Well, good evening, everyone. As Sam said, I'm Dave Davis. I am with my papers are going all over the place. I'm with Environmental Science Associates. I'm a managing associate with them, and we are the district's on-call environmental consultant for these tasks like this. Tonight, I would like to just do kind of a high-level conversation on the environmental and physical considerations that the committee will want to think about as you all contemplate your e-bike policy. I'll be covering what other agencies are doing. We'll real quickly review the board policy number 7, as well as the roads and trails management plan, and then the overview of physical and environmental considerations. So, is the Marin Municipal Water District the only Bay Area agency with these questions? I think you all may have covered this a little bit in previous discussions or in previous meetings, but the answer is no. ESA just did an informal vetting of some of the Bay Area land management organizations or agencies, and these are the folks that we managed to make contact with. As you can see, we've got a little bit of everything up there. Marin County Parks will allow Class 1 and 2 e-bikes on the paved multi-use pathways. The Golden Gate National Recreation Area allows Yes.
The Golden Gate National Area has not.
Use the microphone, sorry. No.
Yeah, GGNRA has not made their decision yet. They have opened their comment period until November 27th, and until that time, they're treating electric bikes as motor vehicles.
Okay.
They have set forth a compendium with all the trails where they might be allowed, but they haven't made the decision yet.
Okay, and thank you for that. I stand corrected. And really, that kind of illustrates just where, you know, the neighboring agencies are. You know, their folks are in different parts of their process. Santa Clara County Parks or Santa Clara County Open Space, e-bikes are allowed on routes open to bicycles. East Bay Regional Parks, unfortunately, we weren't able to get a whole lot of information from them that I could bring forward tonight. East Bay Municipal Utility District, a sister water provider here in the Bay Area, they just don't allow e-bikes at all at this time on their watershed lands. San Mateo County Parks, classes 1 and 2 are allowed, but just in certain areas on their coastside lands, on their bayside lands, but from what we understand, not, you know, kind of down the middle or on the hilltop lands. And then the Mid-Peninsula Open Space District, they're kind of in the same spot that this district is, you know, at the moment. They're currently prohibited except for those with mobility issues, and at that, they're only allowed on trails where bicycles are currently authorized. They will be discussing their e-bike policy at their November 20th board meeting. And they do anticipate doing some sort of environmental review. They really haven't landed on where they're going to go with that. but they do anticipate some sort of vetting of environmental issues.
Can I? So do you want questions now, or you want us to
wait? I can certainly entertain them now.
Debbie,
yeah.
Please, Debbie.
So when I was looking at the summary from last meeting and this meeting, and I see, and so I don't know if this was covered last meeting, so I apologize if it was. It's one thing to show what the decision was, but is there information on why? On what basis did they come to that? Have you, because that would be very helpful to us to know.
Sure.
If they say no, why did they say no? If they say yes, why? Because if it's just, for now it's no because it's no, that's not very helpful. But if there's a reason that we might, it might be helpful to us. So in your research, did you get to a why?
You know, at this point it was a very high level sort of vetting with the other agencies, but that is certainly something that, you know, we can certainly help with. Yeah, I appreciate that. Sierra. Yes, sir.
Is there a reason Point Reyes was left off of it? You sure?
The honest answer, didn't think of them.
Because I know that they just allowed mountain bikes on some roads,
mm-hmm.
and they've got policy out there too.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, Wall? Oh, we're not doing. Okay, I'm sorry.
If I could.
Sure.
At the last meeting, there was a request for information on Santa Clara Valley Water District. They have the same policy as Santa Clara County. We've reached out for more information from them specifically, and they just haven't gotten back to us. But I did want to be responsive to that since I know they specifically came up. So we'll get you more information on that once we have it.
Excuse me. Moving on to District Board Policy Number 7. That is really what governs the management of your watershed lands. Part one of that policy is the general use and management of the Mount Tamalpais watershed. That covers things or regulates things such as land use, facilities development, adaptive management, and other types of general uses. Part two addresses biological diversity. It talks about maintaining natural conditions, species and habitats on watershed lands, exotic species, and managing those. Part three of it is the erosion control, and that really kind of delves into the actual physical management of the roads and trails on watershed lands, stabilizing natural erosion, also addressing some natural occurrences, natural erosion occurrences as well. Part four deals with fire management, fire prevention, fire suppression, prescribed burns, things like that. Part five addresses recreational use. That would be the regulation of recreation activities and management approaches around recreational activities on watershed lands. And then part six is rather short and sweet. It deals with watershed commercial use, which is strictly regulated by the district. So moving on to get into the management plan, this statement right here really kind of defines the purpose of the roads and trails management plan and the district's role as the steward of watershed lands. The district has the responsibility and the opportunity to control the impacts of roads and trails on its watershed lands. The management plan provides the district with management guidelines for implementing best management practices and the modern design and maintenance standards to help protect water quality and minimize erosion. You're in good shape. We drill down a little bit more into the management plan. There are three goals. These are just kind of broader ideas drive the management plan. First one, to improve water quality and minimize sediment into the creeks and its reservoirs. To reduce the impacts of the road and trail network on wetlands, riparian areas, other environmentally sensitive habitats and special status plants and animal species. and finally to reduce the impact of the road and trail network on the watershed's natural ecological function. And then we drill down just a little bit more. There are three objectives that are put forth in the management plan, and what these objectives do are really they take the ideas that were put forth in the goals and kind of focus them in as, you know, perhaps you might think of them as action items, if you will, for district decision makers and district staff. The three objectives are to make decisions regarding the existing road and trail network, to implement best management practices, or BMPs. If you hear us talk about BMPs, that's what we're talking about there. BMPs and environmental protection measures in the upgrade and maintenance of the roads and trails in the watershed, and to devise a system for managing all the roads on the watershed.
Dave, can you explain what
Yes.
When we talk about BMPs, what are we talking about? Are those... are BMPs kind of actions and activities or physically constructed items? What is a BMP in this context?
Well, in answer to the question, yes. You know, BMPs, you know, can be really wide-ranging. They can address the use of equipment to limit erosion. They could be physical things like, you know, how do you grade the road to direct stormwater runoff? They could be filters around drop inlets and, you know, what have you, or culverts to help manage water quality. There's a wide range of, it's just a really wide range of things that one can do with the BMPs. So, concurrent with the development of the management plan, there was an EIR that was prepared, and the EIR supports, as it should, the district's water quality and water supply mission. The environmental impact report did take into consideration, did acknowledge passive recreational uses on watershed lands, but really the focus of that EIR was on the construction, operation, and maintenance of the road and trail network, really more for the district to manage its watershed lands. The analyses focused on hydrology and water quality, vegetation, and wildlife. And then it also looked at other resources, air quality and noise. What would construction do?
Go ahead.
In regard to that, and then it also looked at recreation, proposed trail and road closures. Yes, ma'am.
Just going back to the previous slide. Just at some point, it would be interesting to define passive recreation and distinguish it from active recreation on the watershed.
Well, I think the way that we're looking at it is it's the, you know, passive recreation such as bicycles, such as hiking and running, and such as equestrian.
I just haven't seen that anywhere in the
It's coming up.
It's coming up, okay.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I have a definition here from the board policy number 7 on the management of the watershed. On section 5.2, the criteria states that we shall prohibit recreation activities that may result in impacts that are detrimental to wildlife, vegetation, or other watershed resources or natural processes, recreation that might consume watershed resources such as mushroom collecting or hunting. We will prohibit impacts to sensitive habitats or special status species, and especially in regards to sedimentation impacts on the fish and riparian habitat, so no recreation that could lead to that additional erosion. And we'd also prohibit impact on visitors from conflicting types of recreational use or anything that could be a danger to the welfare or safety of the public.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Now, here we're going to look at how do or how would e-bikes relate to the management plan. You know, we understand now that the district's primary role is the steward of water quality and water supply on its watershed lands, and that the management plan, work plans, and BMPs, their implementation strategies focus on improved or protected water quality. Again, then here's where the passive uses come in. The passive recreational uses are acknowledged in there, and those uses are bicycles, hiking, running, and equestrian use.
I just need a clarifying question.
Sure.
Because I've got two.
Please.
One is a plan and one is a board policy, and I just don't understand, because Crystal just, she just referenced mm-hmm. this document, but yeah. we're talking about a different document that's not in front of us.
So the roads and management plan is yeah. on the Google Doc that we've
it's on the
provided
Google Doc,
to everybody.
But it's, not, right.
it's also on our website. The purpose of giving you the policy to think from is because the roads and trails management plan is built around that policy. And so in order for you all to construct thoughts and recommendations around this, you have to understand what the watershed policy is in relationship to the roads and trails management plan, which really lays out the guiding framework for us to operate the watershed. And the critical thing here under the roads and trails management plan, you know, we are acknowledging the passive recreational activities, but the plan was developed to allow us to do maintenance on road systems to operate the watershed for water resources services. So, you know, accessing pump stations, accessing reservoirs, accessing these facilities that are critical to delivery of water. And that also requires us to maintain those roads for vehicular access. And so that's kind of one of the defining moments is, you know, we are maintaining these roads for vehicles. They also have a secondary use for recreation.
And to Nona's point about the definition of passive recreation, that is not in the
Debbie,
board
sorry,
policy. That's not in the board policy. That's in the management plan?
No, no. That's section 5.2 of the board policy, the passive recreation.
Bicycles, hiking, running, equestrian in it?
No.
But the roads and trails management plan defines the passive recreation
so
as those. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. That's super helpful.
So I think the question that the CAC has been and will be considering is, what is a bicycle? Okay, this, we understand that, you know, bike use is allowed as a secondary recreational use on watershed lands, but today, what is a bicycle? A couple of years ago, the state legislature passed Assembly Bill 1096. It's now codified in the California Vehicle Code. And it defines class 1 and 2 e-bikes as bicycles. And then, of course, bicycles are currently allowed on district service roads. Not trails, but on service roads. So it just, you know, that being the case, the district has the latitude to determine how e-bikes will fit in on its watershed lands, given that state definition.
Class 3 is not or is considered a bicycle?
Under state law, it is not.
What's the difference between service road and trail?
So when we talk about service roads, they're natural surfaced roads that we drive vehicles on, and so they're basically fire roads is another way of thinking about them. The trails are single-track trails where you can hike and equestrian use is allowed. Bicycles are not allowed on single-track trails.
You said equestrians are allowed?
Yes.
Okay. And how come horses are allowed but bikes aren't?
I think this is a historical thing that has come about, is that, you know, equestrian use was way before any other recreational use probably on the watershed. And it's been kind of somewhat of a legacy that's carried over from that time.
And further clarity, there actually are some trails, some hiking trails, where horses, equestrians are not allowed just because they're too steep.
Right.
That were too steep. Uh-huh. And not narrow, but steep. So, a second follow-up question. So it'd be difficult for a horse and another human being face each other to get around each other on a trail that narrow, No.
Correct.
I think there were a couple other hands up. Peter?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get my question.
I apologize.
Sorry, Jonathan.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah, we said correct. It would be difficult.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, and so it's just a historical precedent that keeps bikes off and not horses. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, that yes, that's the history of it.
That's an interesting distinction.
Let me go to
intriguing.
Peter.
Intriguing. Okay, thank you.
No, at this point we'll just go to the committee members and staff. Let me go to Peter and then Gail. Peter?
And so roads are active roads, and there aren't so many in the MMWD lands, but there are some roads that have kind of devolved and become, you know, not actively used service roads, but they're accessible for fire or, you know, something. But most times that's pretty clear.
Are you referring to paved roads that just don't have a lot of vehicle traffic, or what we would commonly consider fire roads?
Fire roads.
Yeah.
But there's some that are on a few ridgeline in areas that are kind of not used by vehicles except in an emergency, really. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, would that always be that clear?
Yeah, there's difficult terrain on the watershed. All the roads, there's 100 miles of roads, are all actively managed, though.
Thank you. Gail, and then over to Nona.
Oh, yeah, just to my neighbor, to horses and hikers, there are rules of the road. So if it's a narrow trail, there are rules everywhere that if you're a hiker and a horse is coming along, you step off. That's, you know, okay. Been clarified.
And that is largely consistent with all of the other land managers around the Bay Area as well.
Correct.
Much of it is, as was pointed out, legacy use from mm-hmm. 200 years ago.
I mean, that's just common sense. If you're walking down a trail and you try and push a horse off the trail, you're going to lose.
Yeah. Nona.
Yeah, just for clarification, actually the state law did include Class 3, according to everything I've read.
Not really.
Class 3, but with certain, which is equipped with a motor and so forth, and can not exceed without assistance. I mean, with assistance, cannot exceed 28 miles an hour. There are some restrictions that apply. Helmets are required for those under 21 years of age, and there are certain access restrictions. But I have never seen anything that excluded a Class 3 from the state, from that vehicle code.
And just as a reminder and primer for folks, hopefully you remember back to the last meeting, when we refer to Class 1 e-bikes, we're talking about pedal-assisted bikes that don't exceed 20 miles an hour under power. Class 2 have a throttle, but also do not exceed 20 miles an hour. And Class 3 can go up to 28 miles an hour and is also pedal-assisted. So it's really a matter of speeds. The big difference there is between Class 1 and Class 2, there is an actual throttle on a Class 2 e-bike.
And to that point, I have read that there are, you know, a number of places that do allow Class 1 and Class 2 and don't allow Class 3, mm-hmm. and that's true with Marin County Parks and their public access, their multi-use pathways. There are only certain places where they will allow Class 3. The point is, though, that as I understood, that they were all three included under the state vehicle code.
Thank you for that, and we'll certainly look into it. Let me go to Robert and then back to Sierra. Robert.
So I'm unclear as to why we're using the vehicle code to define a bicycle. Do the vehicle codes apply on the watershed fire roads?
So the question is why California vehicle code covers bicycle, and that's just the place within the California system of codes and regulations where bicycles fit. So they chose, and the legislation fits under California vehicle code. You know, to your point about where it fits for the district lands, that hasn't been determined yet, and I think that's what we're all here to discuss.
So why do we even refer to the CHV?
That's just how it's defined. That's where it's defined at the state level. So e-bikes are defined as bicycles under California vehicle code.
Sierra? Just effectively, there's no way to know in the field, if you're up on TAM or wherever, the difference between a class one and a class two bike if it's got a throttle. So it seems like class one or class two or class three is kind of a moot point. It just becomes more about how somebody's acting or if they're effectively like really speeding or forcing somebody off the road or something. Because, I mean, you can't tell if something's class two or class three without getting into the electronics.
Yeah, and, you know, that's kind of a consistent concern that was brought up back in the December public meeting. And in the literature that we've read, it's a consistent issue that's come up in a number of other jurisdictions as well. When we get to the user survey, we have some specific questions to that point, and I'd really like to make sure that we get all of your input to make sure those questions are responsive to Sierra's point.
Repeat the point because I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah, so Sierra, oh, go ahead, Sierra.
Well, I couldn't see your face. So.
Yeah.
It just, you can't tell between a class two and a class three bicycle without getting into the computer and the electronics. If a bicycle has a throttle,
yeah,
how are you supposed to know if it'll go over 20 miles an hour?
Right. Yeah. As Crystal points out, we did discuss it, and it is difficult. So when we get to that user survey, let's come back to that and make sure that the questions are well tailored to meet it. Let's go over to Bill. And we'll take one final question from Peter after that, and then I want to give it back to Dave to continue. Bill.
My understanding is that the distinction between class two and class three would be top speed.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the fact that it might have a throttle, but that class two is also pedal assist.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that class three wouldn't necessarily have to be pedaled in order to go forward. And it was my understanding that it was because of the top speed of the class fee that the Water District was focusing on class one and class two bikes because they had a maximum 20 mile an hour speed. It's also my understanding that manufacturers are understanding the difficulty of people considering e-bike use in areas where bicycles had previously been allowed, and that they are making a manufacturer's decal or a stamp. I'm not saying that couldn't be counterfeited somehow, but in general, you could look at the bicycle itself and determine if it was a class one or two bicycle.
Yeah, and that came up in the last meeting as well in the presentation from Bosch, that they did speak specifically to the decal or a way to easily identify it since, as I think was correctly pointed out, right now it's difficult to differentiate. Let's go to Peter and then back to Dave for his presentation.
If you
could use your microphone.
My question was just on the same point as far as the means of identification, and it seems like it. Sometimes there'll be some kind of tag that you could see or find and know what type of vehicle it is.
Right. Okay, thank you for your questions. Let me go back to Dave, and then we'll have another break for discussion.
All right. Well, I'm actually pretty close to wrapping up here. I think the final thing that I want to address here is what are the physical and environmental considerations that would be considered should the district move ahead and environmental review is conducted on a draft policy. The chart here up on the screens, those are the resource areas that would be considered under CEQA, under the California Environmental Quality Act. We have highlighted some areas. The reason they are highlighted is just in, kind of our research and seeing what other jurisdictions have done, some of these things like air quality, biological resources, could be concerned, hydrology, erosion. We highlighted transportation as well to kind of talk about some of the things that some folks on the committee here brought up. Something else I want to point out, too, we tried to highlight cultural resources and we tried to highlight wildfire. I think those are a couple of things that would be ripe for discussion when that time comes. So, but, we just really kind of, put this up for your information that these are the environmental resource areas that would be reviewed.
One question?
Yes, ma'am.
Just in consistency with my request on the why of the decision, when I went back and looked at Santa Clara County Parks, It also looks like they made the decision not to do CEQA, and I'd love to know. That would be another thing, good thing to know why.
Debbie, there's a button. There's a green light on the bottom. It should be lit up green.
It's your microphone when you.
I see the button.
Yes. Wow. Thank you. Sorry. Yes. So just another curiosity in terms of why they came to that decision, unless you know.
No, I have to say I asked the same question. Okay. You know, I was like, how did they do that? Yep. For sure. But I appreciate the thought. And then at this point, I'm going to pitch it back over to Sam, I believe, right?
Actually, before we go on, this is the sort of the summary slide in regards to the discussion on physical and environmental issues. There's been, I hear a lot of talk about, you know, what impacts e-bikes may or may not have. And so we wanted to use this list as sort of a talking point list for the committee to discuss among themselves in regards to these categories. What are some of your concerns or not concerns regarding e-bikes in these categories? So at this, I'd like to take a few minutes at this point and allow the committee to have that discussion.
Yeah, and I want to, you know, reinforce that. Just because we had certain things highlighted on that last slide there, that's not to say that there couldn't be, you know, a valid consideration in any of those other areas either. So don't just, you know, look at, you know, this list or those highlighted bits. You know, there's other things to consider as well.
Go ahead, Nona, you had a question?
Are we commenting on this?
Yes.
Yeah, just one quick note before we get there. So Dave's presentation focused very much on physical and environmental issues. Many of you brought up when we asked for topics for discussion, many of you talked about cultural resources through, again, the environmental review lens. And we're not saying, of course, that, you know, CEQA is the path that the board would necessarily head in. But when many of you highlighted cultural resources, you're going beyond physical cultural resources, what would often be, you know, archaeological resources and that sort of thing, and more about kind of the social and cultural aspects of bikes. We will certainly get to that, and we want to focus on that discussion as part of the user survey and the next meeting. But at least for the purposes of this list, we're kind of focused on actual physical things that could be impacted by e-bikes. So I just wanted to make sure that was characterized, since I know it was an issue of concern for a number of you. Nona, yeah.
Yeah, just I realize that what you're trying to do is to...
Can you use your mic, please?
Yeah, sorry. I realize that what you're trying to do is to confine the discussion to physical and environmental issues and then save the cultural issues. At the same time, having been familiar for decades
sure.
with the CEQA suite of issues, shall we say, Appendix G and the guidelines for CEQA, I don't want to find ourselves in a CEQA straitjacket. Even though we're going to defer to CEQA at some point, decide whether some new action will require perhaps an amendment to the or some supplement to the road and trail EIR. safety, for example, is a category, an issue that was used by the state parks when they did their program EIR, which everyone kind of references. They did a rather long section on safety, including both perception and actual. So hazards and hazardous materials that, I could come up with lithium batteries. Okay. My point is, let's just not find ourselves in a CEQA straitjacket. Let's make sure that there are impacts that kind of move outside the physical environmental constraint of CEQA that we don't lose them.
Right. And as you note, in future meetings, the next meeting will be on the interactions between user groups, so the more social interactions. And we have another meeting past that on safety issues. So we will be talking directly about safety issues in a future meeting.
Right. Yeah, I think your point's very well taken. We don't want to be limited to just the strict things that a typical environmental review would look at. Okay. Let me go back to the list here. So to Crystal's suggestion, we want to hear your thoughts. Are there other, you know, are there other physical items, physical and environmental issues that need to be identified here? We have talked, you know, we've talked about wildfire, and the gentleman from Bosch at the last meeting talked a lot about industry standards for batteries and the potential for wildfire, but I know it's been brought up in correspondence that several of you have sent to me, and I'm sure to the district as well. But we just want to open it up and get your thoughts on this list and the items that you see up here. Yeah, Robert.
So I'd like to see highlighted their public services.
Okay.
And although this is physical and environmental issues, there is the fiscal issue as well, which relates to public services. And I believe public services includes the field staff, outreach, and all of the things that come into play when you add a new type of activity. So I'm not sure where it might fit into the discussions going forward, but there will be concerns about money and staffing.
Sure. You reference public services. Is there anything specific about public services that you want the district to be looking at there?
Yes. The availability of public services. Complaint on the watershed and elsewhere is that there's hardly a ranger to be found. And if you're adding a large new responsibility, there will either be more rangers added or even fewer to be found. So I'm concerned about staffing.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. All right. Yes, Debbie.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I understand what the question is of us right now. So to Nona's point about not wanting to be in a CEQA straitjacket, I get that. But for now, right this moment, we're looking at the fact that there was an EIR done
mm-hmm.
for the roads and trails.
Right.
It assumed passive recreation,
mm-hmm.
but did not focus on it. It focused on construction and these other things.
Right.
So the impacts of bicycles and horses and walking was assumed and not taken into account. So this...
Well, the impact from those was minimal when you compare it to vehicles operating on
so
the roads.
So is that what was written in the EIR, is that it was assumed to be minimal? And so
no.
I
read the EIR.
Not minimal, but I think that in terms of addressing the impacts,
uh-huh.
you know, environmental impact, it was those activities for maintenance and construction needed mitigation. So we,
right.
with best management practices.
And the passive did not need mitigation.
Well,
so it was
the trail construction. The trail construction is designed in a way to reduce erosion from passive uses as well. So, you know, in regards to whether or not there's a rock crossing on a stream, you know, an intermittent stream, so that they don't erode. So certainly the trail construction as well, which is recreation. There's no vehicles on the trails. That trail construction is being devised in a way to minimize erosion and sedimentation.
Yeah. Just, you know, I want to draw everybody's attention to one of Dave's slides here that speaks to this. So passive recreational uses acknowledge the roads, and again, we're talking about the natural surface fire roads, the only places where bikes are currently allowed and likely would be allowed in the future within the district.
Right.
Those roads are all designed for H20 vehicle loading. So H20 is heavy trucks, fire trucks, and that sort of thing.
I see.
And the common assumption is that if a road is designed for that sort of heavy use, a bicycle, an equestrian, et cetera, would have a
minimal
less of a use
okay.
than those.
So now cars. I'm going to get to my... So that's great, and that helps me understand, because
sure.
I'm trying to get to what the question is you want of us. So the question before us now is, given that, during that process, a regular bicycle was considered minimal compared to the functional use of those roads, the question before us now is, do we have additional concerns that an e-bike would be different from a regular bike on those things?
That's exactly right. You stated
okay.
it far better than I did.
Okay. So, because I think that's a really important question. I mean, yeah. obviously, in a way, it's the crux of what we're trying to figure out right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so your question to us is there any of that list that we would like to better understand the potential impact of an e-bike compared to a regular bike? Because
correct.
A regular bike has already been designated as minimal.
That's correct, in the existing roads.
And so then for me to answer that question, and I don't know if maybe some of these papers are going to get to that when
mm-hmm.
I read them, is I'm curious about when I think about an e-bike, I can't think of a difference, but I don't, I'm here with an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious if on the geology and soil erosion, and so when you say biological resources, is that the impact on nature? I mean, or the impact on animals and plants? What is that biological resources?
That's exactly it.
Okay.
Plants, animals.
I'm sorry.
Plants, animals, sensitive habitats, wetlands, riparian areas.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
So for me, I am less worried about that because we're talking about bicycle, e-bikes on a place where bicycles are already allowed. So the part, if the question is, do we have concerns or questions, I guess the point that I would be most interested in is geology, soils, and erosion. Is there a difference between an e-bike and a regular bike on that? Because we're talking about going on a road that's designed for a heavy-duty vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not as worried, and I'm curious what my other panelists feel about the biological resources,
mm-hmm.
and I'm curious if people are worried about that, and if they are, why? And then maybe it's because a lizard can't get out of the way or something like that, but I'm just, no, I mean, that's legit. Yeah. So I, am I getting at your question?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
And I think that's a perfect segue. I know Nona was waiting, and then over to Bill as well. Nona.
I think it would be useful to bring a few passages from the EIR that do discuss the impact, not just of bikes, but of hikers, of equestrians, of all uses, of recreational uses. And there are some very well-crafted statements in the EIR. And the word does not add up to minimal. It adds up to considerable impact from ongoing recreational uses. So let's put that aside. I'd be glad to comb through the EIR and find the passages that I've seen in the past.
That'd be very helpful. Thank you. Bill?
Yeah, I did have a chance to review this document, and I don't mean to leap forward in this, but Mountain Biking Review of the Ecological Effects, which was in Parks Canada, and I happened to note an area where they said mountain biking effects on soils. And there's quite a bit to read here, but a couple of notes that I made. It says, a study that was conducted on a multi-use trail network in Kentucky and Tennessee found that of all types of trails, bike trails were found to be the narrowest, to have the least amount of soil lost, and have the least incidence of running water on trails. But in the paragraph above that, it said that authors found that foot and hoof-powered activities, hiking and horseback riding, had a greater erosive potential than did wheeled vehicles, off-road vehicles, and mountain bikes. This effect was found to be especially pronounced when going downhill. Now, that really surprises me. I hadn't considered single-track trails relative to horses and foot use relative to bicycles, because we're not allowed on single-track trails. So I think the idea, we're not asking to be on single-track trails.
That's
with
correct.
E-bikes, but it's an interesting document,
mm-hmm.
and the study having been made, that I would assume that the mountain bikes have very little impact on the fire roads that we're asking to be allowed on. One thing I noted on a ride this morning, in fact, is that a friend of ours was ahead of us on an early morning ride, and he's riding a regular bicycle, which I think Larry Bragman coined as an acoustic bicycle as opposed to an electric bicycle. And we were trying to figure out whose track it was.
Mm-hmm.
Was it an e-bike or was it a regular mountain bike, the way it makes a track of its tire in the soft soil. And they're virtually undetectable between the two. It's far more easy to understand the tire brand and tread pattern than it is whether or not it's an e-bike or it's a regular mountain bike. So I just wanted to add that in terms of soils erosion, and quite an interesting paragraph here in the Canadian study.
Thank you. And I realize this is the first time that many of you have, well, that probably most of you have had the opportunity to look at those studies. So it's okay if you haven't had a chance to dig in yet.
Well,
Sean?
We just want to say that the studies were provided to you at this meeting for discussion at the next meeting. So let's hold our comments and digging into those documents until everyone has a chance to read those.
Yeah. Let's go over to Sierra and then Robert. Sierra.
I look at this list and I think about the difference between a regular bicycle and a mountain bicycle, and I don't see much. I mean, I think about noise, and you can have a whir or a click from a electric bike, but you can have an awful irritating dry chain or click on a regular bike too. So, you know, the main difference I see is really going uphill
mm-hmm.
on an e-bike. And, you know, going downhill, people, you're not really going to use your battery too much. I mean, it's just going to be the speed and the weight of the bike.
Mm-hmm.
There's some young people and some strong people that can go pretty darn fast on the flats, even slightly uphill. But overall, I think e-bikes tend to go a little bit quicker uphill than pedal bikes. And I look at that for transportation, and I think of, well, one place that comes to mind is Phoenix Lake and going to Fairfax and not wanting to ride on the roads and transportation. If somebody has an e-bike and they're commuting someplace, it doesn't seem right to me to ban them from taking the dirt and not having to go traffic all the way back to Fairfax. So I see that as transportation.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of other roads and trails like that, and the difference being whether you have an e-bike or whether you're pedaling.
Thank you. Robert.
So just like my recent rides on an electric motorized bicycle, I feel about 30 years younger because I'm hearing something that I heard 30 years ago, which is a discussion of whether horses or bicycles do more damage on the trails. If we want to go back there, I'll stay here. You guys go, okay?
Thank you. Okay. Yes, Jonathan.
Yes. I want to note with, I don't know, some adverb or adjective about with irony that the presentation at the last meeting on e-bike motors was from a corporation. And which has a vested interest in making sure that their product is sold and used on the mountain. So I decided to do some research above and beyond the call of beauty and looked into such things as quality issues and warranties and so on, and also talked with some people that I know
mm-hmm.
about the issue. We're not talking about batteries. Batteries themselves have a lithium-ion batteries have a certain kind of danger, but just the motors, the different kinds of motors that we have, mid-drives, direct drives, geared hubs, frictions, those people who are doing do-it-yourself motors, motors imported from countries and companies that aren't falling under the CE or the UL designation. Those are all quite concerned because lower-end e-bikes, and I'll quote this from an article from Bicycle.com written by Dan Rowe, lower-end e-bikes might not have a thermal rollback, which a feature that measures the motor's internal temperature to keep it from overheating. And when a motor gets too hot, the protective enamel surrounding the I think it's pronounced stator wires, can melt off. So put simply, too much sustained low-speed climbing can fry a motor without thermal rollback. I like being, you know, 30 years younger and taking my life into extension my own hands, zipping down a mountain or up a mountain in an electric bike. But I have a high-end bike, and I'm concerned about those bikes that would impede biological resources and I'm not perhaps soils and erosion because of the materials that might come out of a battery or of a bike or possibly cause a wildfire mm-hmm. because of the heat. They get pretty hot. So those are the concerns that I have.
Yeah.
As much as I love riding off-road, it's a huge, huge thrill. Everybody ought to experience.
Well, and, you know, the point about wildfire that's been made several times, and that's why, you know, we're going to have a meeting specifically focused on the safety issue. I know that you had written about getting some additional voices in the room besides just the gentleman from Bosch, and we'll certainly look into that. The one thing that I kind of want to point out here, and this has been sort of an over... I don't know, overriding discovery that we've had as we've done research as well. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, at least in the United States, very little technical work exists that evaluates the physical and environmental impacts of e-bikes. And when I say very little, I mean almost none, and certainly almost none that's scientifically rigorous and, you know, from respected institutions and not from industry or advocacy groups, regardless of the side of the discussion. So I want, you know, everybody to be aware of that. And when you have articles like the one that Jonathan just mentioned, please do start uploading those to the Google Doc. I think everybody has that link and we'll send it out again. But we're just trying to build the knowledge base with all of you as well, because this is quite new. The other point that I'll make is that very little technical work exists that evaluates the physical and environmental effects of mountain bikes. So the acoustic bikes, or, you know, what we would consider conventional bikes, much of that work hasn't been done either. So you're really at the forefront here and being asked, you know, a series of difficult questions without a full data set. So I'll just make the pitch again. If you do have the opportunity to read through those articles between now and the next meeting, that'd be wonderful. And if you have additional resources that we haven't identified yet, please do upload those and let us know so that we can get the word out to the rest of the committee as well. We'll take just another maybe minute on the list. Were there any other kind of buckets or topics that you wanted to make sure were identified here? Sierra.
I mean, this is just short, but I think the hazardous problems from e-bikes are relatively minimum. Mm-hmm. I mean, someone's probably going to throw an e-bike in the lake eventually, but I think most people are going to, the batteries are too valuable, for example, and I think we're going to get more pollution running off from cars and oil and everything else on the roadway on Bolinas Road, for example, than most e-bikes. And as for fires, most fire roads are pretty burn-proof, mm-hmm. and if somebody's riding their bike and it catches fire, I think they're going to tend to leave it in the middle of the road and kind of jump off of it.
One would hope that they don't throw it into brush, but...
I don't think we need to worry too much about the mountain going up from a battery.
Well, and that kind of gets to the next item for discussion that we wanted to talk about, and that's the user survey. Again, you know, what we're trying to get at with this document is not necessarily a real scientifically rigorous study at this point. We're just trying to get as much input from the user and recreation community, from all of you and the networks that you're involved with. Get that input in front of you about things like rider behavior, which Sierra mentions. It is certainly our hope that nobody would throw a flaming bike into brush. Has anybody actually seen something like that? We'd kind of like to hear about it. Bill, you had a question.
Yeah, you can tell if a person is on an e-bike by the smile on their face.
Thank you. And we certainly look forward to the demo so that everybody has a chance to actually get on one as well.
That depends on how old you are.
Well, I think there may be some information, well, not studies, but... you know, compiled from some heavy use areas is, you know, the Mammoth e-bike park in the Sierra Tahoe area, where there's, extensive biking and long distance trips and pretty aggressive riding. And so some of that has something that's going to be in a later session is, and it's really not for us to determine in a free world or, you know, not being NIMBY, but at a certain point, there is a scale. If somehow all of a sudden there are hundreds of people, or as I mentioned, there are companies sending large groups out, and I know for in the parks and things, sometimes there are limits on, you know, well, you can't have hiking group over a certain amount of people, you mm-hmm. know, on, without reservation or something, just so that places don't get overrun, and these things haven't necessarily happened, but, you know, it's kind of out there, and the world is changing.
Yes, certainly, and, you know, the issue of increased traffic and use of trails, we will cover that in impacts other user groups, and we want to discuss that with all of you as well. Specific to Mammoth, I mean, I can just tell because I ride there as much as I can. You're taking a chairlift up, so hopefully not too many people are using e-bikes in the first place. But Debbie.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Oh, I thought I did it.
Wait a minute. It,
oh, you know what?
Don't go so far back.
Yeah, I turn it off. That's the problem.
Wonderful.
Okay. So the survey. Yeah, obviously it is not a scientific survey, but I was curious on question five. The order of what was the thinking behind the order of those questions?
Can I ask you to hold that for a second? Oh. We're actually going to walk through stepwise.
Okay.
So real quickly, again, this is a potential survey. We wanted to get from all of you whether you think this is a worthy and useful use of our time and yours. But the goal here is really to inform your December 10th discussion, and specifically. Identify the common watershed recreation user types as well as demographic information. We're curious to hear things about age ranges, where folks are coming from to use this great resource that you have. We want to assess some of the common perceptions of current e-bike usage among those different recreation user groups. Determine attitudes towards potential future e-bike use. And then finally, really inform your discussion relating to a whole host of different recreation user types.
Hey, Sam, can I jump in real quick?
Yes, please do, Sean.
And I just want to clarify, you know, we did have this e-bike community workshop in December.
Right.
The intent of this is to be an informal survey that we actually go out onto the watershed and get people using the watershed's perspective on this issue, and not just folks that show up to all the meetings on these topics. Because there's a whole other, you know, side of this discussion that isn't always being brought into the room, and that's what we're trying to do for you as the CAC members.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, we will be providing the survey as a link that can go out, but some of these, you know, initial questions are really going to help us filter it just to be able to present it in different ways to you, and so you can kind of think about what you know, a broader audience is thinking about the issue.
Right. Thank you. Yes, here.
It just seems pretty limited having a one-month survey, and I wonder just what kind of data you're going to get on that. And I mean, you might get a sprinkling of people walking on the water district, which would be great, but if it's going to be online, it's like, how is it getting distributed, and how is it getting slanted in terms of what group is finding it? And
yeah. So a couple things. We looked at a couple different examples of this type of survey that have been done to evaluate it for e-bikes. Jefferson County, we also looked at what Marin County Parks did. And a lot of those surveys were even shorter terms. And they were really just on a day of use to see what's out there. We're really not trying to make this a statistically relevant study that looks at the whole, you know, demographic of Marin and their perspectives. So, I mean, you have to keep that in mind. And we only have 8 meetings for the CAC. We have to cram all this stuff in and present it to you and have discussion around it. So there are time limitations.
So maybe go to like one trailhead at Phoenix Lake or something and do it for a weekend.
Right.
Or, yeah.
Our goal.
Hold on. You mentioned Jefferson County?
Jefferson County, Colorado.
Oh, yes. Okay. Right outside the city, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So many of these questions are actually based on some of those previous survey designs. And they were able to generate a fairly large response rate, which is always, as you all know and have raised in the assessment interviews that we did, many of you pointed out that response rates can be low. So we're on kind of an aggressive schedule to get as much information back to you as possible in the timeline that we have. Debbie, you had a question? Oh, sorry, Bill.
I had a question, yeah, Sam. You know, I find consistently that I think people could be confused between Mount Tamalpais Service Road, let's say Section 2, e-bike perceptions. Question number 2, how often have you encountered e-bikes on Mount Tamalpais Service Roads in the last 6 months? And then the first question, A, says, I've never encountered an e-bike on watershed trails.
Yes.
And I'm confused about what you're asking. Should that, in fact, say, I've never encountered an e-bike on Mount Tamalpais Service Roads?
Yes, it it should, and we'll make that modification.
Would you make that correction? Because I find consistently even some of our local bicycle organizations are talking about natural surface trails
right.
when they really mean fire roads. And I think that could really sway a person's opinion if they misunderstood the question.
That's a great point. And thanks, when we Bill. Get to that point in the slides, we did make the change in the slides your earlier comments that you submitted. Okay. And I'm sorry, I just didn't update these
questions. I read the draft you sent me. I printed it out and looked
through
it.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for that. We did make those modifications in the slides, and we'll be updating this document based on your question.
May I make another comment, or should I
Let's wait until we get to each one of the sections, if that's okay. So the first section, as we mentioned, is on demographics and recreation user information. As Sean mentioned, what we're trying to do is actually identify who's out there using it and who's been coming in contact with e-bikes. So we have a few questions on basic demographics, name, kind of their area or city of residence, typical watershed usage amount per month. You know, if folks are out there once every 6 months, we know that they're not what we would consider regular recreation users. You all are out there quite a bit more, and we want to try to engage that population as well.
Privacy and in then, regards to names.
What's that?
Privacy in regards to names.
Excellent point. Let me address that in just a moment.
I didn't hear what you said. I'm sorry.
He asked how we'll protect privacy and name information, which is always an issue with surveys. Let me just get through this slide, and then I'll open it up to your questions. And then finally, the last thing we want to do is just identify, you know, for everybody filling out the survey, what recreation usage type they're doing most often. Are you hiking? Are you a bird watcher, equestrian, biker, et cetera? to Robert's point, which is a very good one on basic demographics, we can strike out name. Yeah. I will say the platform that we're planning on using is called Qualtrics. The Sac State University uses it regularly, and that information doesn't go any further than the district and Sac State for the purposes of identifying where people actually reside, so that we know whether they're in county or out of county. It wouldn't be publicly released at any point, though. There were several other hands up. Let me get to those first. Nona?
Yeah, in that section, I have several additions
okay.
to make.
Yeah, please.
Under age range, I would say not over 60, but 60 to 70, and then over 70. I mean, like 60 is the new normal 40 or something. I mean, let's get real and get the people who are really, like, really old.
Yes, we'll certainly
I'll
add that in.
Leave myself out of that one. So then under how often do you visit, I've suggested that someone has said several times per week.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really frequent visitor. And under five, how do you recreate, you should add running and jogging, which is not in the list, and biking, you know, and e-biking itself. Well, no, let's leave that, whatever. Running and jogging.
Swimming.
Pardon?
Swimming.
Only
hopefully there's not too many bikers coming in contact with people swimming.
Yes, right. Yeah,
Okay. Gail. Gail and then back to Debbie.
Well, tires are tires, and it may not matter, but everybody out there is a guy. And I wonder if sex makes any difference. Tires are tires, but I'm curious.
There are a few women in the audience. So.
Gail, can I?
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, I actually think gender is really a great question.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Got to mind that.
It's so hard. I'm short, so I have to move it down, but every time I move it down, it turns off. We've done a lot of surveys in San Francisco on concerns on bicycling. We noticed that in San Francisco, most of our cyclists are white males. And we did a big survey on gender and find that the concerns of women on bicycles, or women in general, are very different than men. And so I really think gender is a very important question to ask here.
Okay.
And so, I don't know how it is here, but in San Francisco, you have to allow a non-gender conforming question.
Yes.
So I just want to echo that, Debbie. So that
there you go.
I found out from the folks at MCBC that about 75% of people who use bikes are men. Leaving 25%. We'll assume everybody is, you know, they're split up between the two, but mostly men and very few women by comparison.
Thank you. Go to Bill, and then
I want to move through the remainder of the questions.
Can we move to section two, question number four?
Any final questions on demographics? Okay, let's go ahead and move on. All right. So the next section is on e-bike perceptions. Again, these questions are around familiarity with e-bikes, and that's kind of where it gets to Sierra's question earlier about identifying them on the trail. The number of encounters people have had with e-bikes, and that really ties into it. They're hard to spot, and we don't know, you know, can the average user even tell the difference between an e-bike and a conventional bicycle? The number of times each survey respondent has actually ridden an e-bike. And then finally, preference for allowing e-bikes on, and this is where we did, Bill, to your point earlier, make the change, natural surface fire roads, service roads. We'll be making that change throughout the document for consistency. Great. But to your question, go ahead.
Yes. Also, kind of the same point, section two, question four, says, do you think e-mountain bikes should be allowed on service roads in the Mount Tamalpais watershed? That's very clear, but I would urge you to add, as is the current MMWD policy for all bicycles, because I wouldn't want the user to think that somehow it's different than bicycles that the question involves. Do you think they should be used allowed on service roads as consistent with all bicycles?
Certainly. That's great. Nona, yeah, and then over to John.
One more to add to that section, section four, which would be really another question. This was suggested to me by somebody else, and that is, are there any conditions or individual circumstances where e-bikes should be allowed, A, elderly, B, disabled, C, organized tour, or D, not under any circumstances? So something which gives the an opportunity to at least, you know, suggest perhaps some special circumstances.
Yeah, I think my suggestion would be that under question five, the table here, and the user will actually be able to select each one of those boxes for their preference, but adding questions there that get specifically to, and I'm sorry, the groups you mentioned were elderly. Disabled.
Yeah, that has to be defined. That's like that's a 30-year span. Some people feel they're elderly at 60, I guess.
I'm 38, and I feel it every day.
Disabled. And, of course, that could be qualified or not qualified. That's complicated in itself. Organized tours or not under any circumstances. Those were the suggestions.
Okay. Great, thank you. Jonathan, and then let's go over to Sierra and back to Robert. Jonathan.
So I think that the nomenclature we use for the particular instrument that we're all talking about, bikes that are motorized, we're using in question three and four is e-mountain bike. And I probably would urge that we take the word mountain off of that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's good.
I mean, one of the questions that Sierra brought up speaks to the different kinds of the different construction of bikes that are electric. The ones that I tried out at Mike's Bikes and over on Trek had a much more what you call aggressive posture. You're leaning farther forward. And there are others that, for example, at the new wheel where you're riding up higher. And that can urge somebody into going faster or not, depending on the person and the size of that person. But I just wanted to make sure that we call them e-bikes rather than mountain bikes.
Yeah, and I realize this is the first time we had introduced a new term, and the survey is not the right spot for that, so we'll make the change, and it'll just reference e-bikes generally. Sean, did you have something?
I just want to do a quick time check and just say we're coming to about 7:30 almost, and I want to be mindful and just get a little discussion around, do you feel that this would be a valuable survey, one, and two, do you want this to be a survey that we do only on the watershed, or do you want us to also provide the link that can be shared more broadly? And we can do it both ways, we can filter it both ways, but it's kind of a question to this group. First, do you want to do this and move forward with it? And second, how broadly do you want to move forward with it?
So let's tackle the first question, and then we'll continue through the remaining slides really quickly here. How do folks feel about the concept of a survey generally? Pretty good, not so great?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's good as long as it's a fair survey.
Okay.
And I had a couple of additions to number five, question number five.
Yeah.
There's an appropriate point to bring those up.
But generally speaking, nobody's uncomfortable. Robert, can you talk a little bit about your discomfort with the survey?
Yeah. I think it's a great exercise if the district would like to see what happens when they do a survey. But I think as a source of information, it's too vague, it's too soft, and it's subject to misuse. I would encourage the district to do a real visitor survey, similar to some that I've seen elsewhere, that take a lot of time, a lot of effort, cost money, and don't supply something that then is used to either beat somebody over the head or leverage something.
So basic suggestion, yes, Crystal. Yeah.
So in response to that comment, thank you very much. I agree. We don't want this survey to serve as any source of for decision making. It needs to be what we give back to the committee for review is certainly going to be qualitative information that we find from the survey and not quantitative. In no way do we want to take data and start coming out with statistics or probabilities associated with it because it isn't scientific. We would use it just as some qualitative general comments that we heard in order to facilitate the next month's meeting.
Yeah, and I will just add on that in 2012 and 2013, there was a user census survey done on the watershed, and we can provide that as a link to the Google Doc. It's on our website. So that has been done here, Robert. I think this is meant to be a very focused survey, and it has been a model that other agencies have used to get a little bit of this information, because I don't think we've heard all of the perspectives quite yet on this.
So before we go to other questions, seeing a lot of hands jump up, Robert, based on what Crystal and Sean just mentioned, does that modify your view at all, or you feel that it shouldn't move forward?
No. I would ask if you do the survey that you provide the surveyee with a definition of an e-bike and possibly call it an electric bicycle. There may be people that'll nod their head, say yes or no, and actually walk away thinking you were selling them some kind of Apple product.
Understood. Thank you. A lot of hands were up there. Let me go to Sierra first, and I'll work.
Couple things. One is on the paper. It's like under five.
Yes.
Do you agree with the statements? No, sorry. I think should be belong on paved roads because we have the service roads, the dirt roads, and the paved roads, and people are going to confuse that with bikes shouldn't be allowed on the roads at all in Mount Tam, or maybe,
yeah.
You know, it's confusing. In terms of the survey, I'd like to see something about, like, what brings you to the watershed today. I'd like to know, it's like, if people are primarily hikers, bikers, you're going to get different answers to these questions, whether someone's hiking or biking, and I'm curious how people hiking feel about the bikes.
Yeah, so we tried to do that in section 1, question 5, but we can change the wording a little bit.
And also, did. I'd prefer if the survey was only given like at trailheads and not online, because I think you're going to get a different set of data if you're just catching people that are actually using the water district than if it gets online. It can get skewed from people just taking it.
Thank you.
So would you?
Let me go to Gail first.
I agree with Sierra. I think a brief survey on the water district is good, but not online, because you'll just have people from all groups, whether they're environmentalists or bicyclists, everybody piling on, and I just think a brief one on the trail's fine.
I would agree with that one.
Yeah, great.
Well,
let me, Peter, go to Bill first, and then I'll work counterclockwise.
You know, I've been really thinking about Robert's point about the survey being utilized to skew the outcome one way or another, potentially. And of the items in number five that I observed here, I felt that there are six potentially negative questions and three potentially positive questions although the responders can strongly disagree or agree with them all. The other issues that I would ask you to consider including would be the question, do you think e-bikes can reduce the number of cars people use to access the watershed? Because I think that's an enormous advantage. When we go to Phoenix Lake, there are people lined up with their cars running halfway down the road, waiting for a parking place so that they can go for a hike. Most of the people who ride bicycles, whether they're e-bicycles or regular bicycles, are simply riding to the place from a distant parking lot that's not so congested. So do you think e-bike can reduce the number of cars people use to access the watershed would be one question. The other one is, do you think e-bikes might utilize watershed fire roads to encourage more local bicycle commuting and reduce traffic congestion? And speaking to Sierra's point, that you can go from San Anselmo to Fairfax on Center Boulevard, or you could go on Shaver Grade and down into Deer Park and never touch the road. And so I think that there's some there's almost an attitude about what you have on the survey here that I would contest. I think electric vehicles, there's certainly a lot of electric vehicle opportunities nowadays. I've been getting letters saying that there are e-bikes and e-cars, and reducing pollution in Marin is a major attitude, and electric vehicles might also be mentioned. Do you think e-bikes and e-cars are a good alternative to conventional automobiles in order to fully bring that e-bike concept full circle as to the advantages of getting away from fossil fuel?
All right, thank you.
There's e-candy bars coming out now, too.
The e-bar. you microwave them.
So we'll go Debbie and then give Peter the last word.
So
my hand's up.
Also. Oh, okay. Oh. Thanks, Nona.
Okay, so to your question on do we think that this is a good idea, I think that, I have three thoughts on that. Yes, I would like to know this information. I do think it's good to do online. How, as in addition, however, you want to distinguish that. So if one of the distinctions, and that's pretty easy to do, is where did that comment come from? Was it an online or was it on the trail? And I think the thing that gives me heartburn about doing the survey is some of the things we just heard, which is really in question number 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really intrigued by Nona's suggestion of how she gave a list of things that is a little softer way of getting at it,
mm-hmm,
than question 5. So okay. I'm responding in that same way of concern over the order and the number, and then we start wanting to add more, and
sure,
then it gets really long and the person gets annoyed. So I'm just curious. We might want to rethink number 5 and think about Nona's suggestion instead.
The reason this format was used, again, it was originally developed by People for Bikes, a group in Denver, out of Boulder, I believe, for bike surveys that they've conducted for a variety of other jurisdictions. And the primary reason they went with the table format was specifically to cut down on the total length of the survey.
Yeah.
I've found that if it takes somebody more than 10 minutes to fill it out, they're not going to fill it out.
They won't wait 10 minutes.
Yeah.
10 minutes is too long,
it is.
Even that.
Well, I'm talking specifically about an online survey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the online is a very poor idea for the reasons.
Okay, so let me go to Peter, and then I'll circle back around. Peter, please.
I agree with the point of not necessarily having it as an online collection of things, but at the same time, if one encountered the survey on the trail, often if I run into something, sometimes I'm not in the mood to stop for more than a minute. I mean, I don't want to read or talk to anybody. You know, I'm hiking or something, but I do want to respond and follow up. And so, you know, there's some way to be able to have an input online or
mm-hmm,
or after the fact so you can collect it. And then the other one was that I appreciate, and I think it was a good qualifier for the whole idea was that it was purpose of the survey is sort of a non-quantitative temperature taking, just to get some ideas and sort of like a focus group,
mm-hmm,
And so you can collect these things and you know, help further define or characterize it.
Thank you. We'll go to Nona and then Bill.
A couple of things on the chart itself, if you use that. First, I think it could be shortened. But the last item on, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, can encourage new users. And then you kind of load that one by saying, can encourage new users to experience the outdoors, as mm-hmm. though there is no other way to experience the
can
outdoors.
You get closer to the mic.
Oh, sorry. As though there's no other way to experience the outdoors. I mean, you could be a hiker who's decided to use an e-biker. You could be a biker who's decided to use an e-biker. So take out the to experience outdoors because
watershed or something.
No, just to try something new. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can get outdoors in half a dozen ways.
Sure.
And people are probably already experiencing the outdoors, but yeah, I think I'll try an e-bike.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose of getting on an e-bike is not to experience the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
There are other ways to do it. It's one way to do it. The other is that I would add, it says here, help bikers keep riding longer due to age ability. The point here really is two points. One is on behavior. And the statement could read, behavior on e-bikes differs from behavior on traditional mountain bikes, for example, in uphill speed. In other words, do you perceive that the behavior of a biker on an e-bike is different from that same person's behavior on a traditional bike? And it would be on the mountain, it's going to be an e-bike, a mountain bike. And the other is, do you perceive, then again in the chart, e-bike riders typically cover more miles on a, quote, ride because of power assist.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the chart says agree, disagree, and so forth. But right. That is actually it has been measured that on a given ride, I mean, there actually is a study that charts the documents the average speed, that is the uphill, downhill, roundabout speed
mm-hmm.
of e-bikes compared to traditional mountain bikes.
Can you share that study with us when you have the opportunity?
Yeah.
Thank you. Over to Bill.
My e-bike has an average speed of every ride that I do. And so I wonder if I could submit that as useful information as to the average speed overall that a regular bike might ride and an average speed that an e-bike might ride. That information is available right on the bike computer. If even a traditional bicycle would have a little bike computer telling you your mileage and your speed and sort of that. The question
a watch, too.
A watch.
Yeah.
My real question, comment is a question. I see problems with this survey if we install it at the lake and put up a card table and have people going by do a survey. And I also see a problem with doing it online. I'm wondering, since the Water District sends me a bill every month, I'm wondering if it might be included in the information that we get as a regular mailing to the Water District customers.
Yeah.
And try and survey the district's customer base and see how they feel. And,
right.
And maybe this survey would be abbreviated somehow, but I wonder if that's feasible.
So I'll leave it to the district.
Only the motivated will reply.
Yeah, just in regards to that, that process takes at least 5 months to set up because our billing is a 2-month cycle, and to get the cards into the envelopes. So you probably wouldn't get data on that for at least 5 to 6 months.
After this group has concluded its work.
Perhaps, yeah.
Would there be a way to separate the billing process from the survey process and still utilize the clientele of the Water District and their mailing addresses?
It might end up being cost prohibitive. A card mailer to 60,000 people at 25 cents a pop is going to cost you $15,000. Yeah.
So I'm hearing very loud and clear that there's mixed opinions on how the survey should be circulated and whether or not it should even move forward at this point. So my proposal to the group, knowing that we're running low on time here, is to work do two things. First, all of you have received this document via email. If you could submit additional modifications to the questions by close of business on Thursday, that would be great. It's very short. I'm hoping that doesn't take you more than 15 minutes.
Can you send it out as a Word document, please?
Yes, I will send it as a Word document immediately following this meeting. So please get any questions or revisions in by Thursday. And then there are some larger issues of how the survey should be circulated and whether it should be circulated that I think we need to discuss with the district a little bit more. But Sean and Crystal, before we wrap up this item, did you have any additional thoughts on it? I did want to go and spend a little bit of time on the schedule we had proposed, but I wanted to give you both an opportunity to talk.
No, I think we just wanted to hear what everyone thought about doing a survey, if there was value for this group. I mean, that's really the purpose, is to give you more information from a broader audience of users. So I think we'll take the comments that you have and review them on Thursday and you know, give us your thoughts when you respond with your comments. And if we don't, if we have general consensus, we'll move forward with it.
Data is always a good thing. It's just a matter of what's the data.
Yeah. Crystal, any additional thoughts on it? Great. So I did want to talk just a little bit about what we had perceived as the next steps. This may shift a little bit based on all of the good input that we've received from you tonight. So obviously we're here at November 12th. We wanted to receive your input on the survey design itself. It had been our hope to provide a link to all of you and staff as well, for electronic distribution to all of the networks that you belong to and the folks that you interact with regularly. Obviously, this may change a little bit based on several of the comments we've received, but the hope here is that we can start relying on all of you to reach out to the communities that you're involved in to get input. Whether you come from more of a hiking and nature background, biking background, whatever it may be, we kind of need to start looking to all of you to be bringing information back to the table as well. So we were hoping, if the district does make the determination to move forward with an electronic version, that you'd be willing to send it out to people within your general networks and communities. Again, we'll discuss that and figure out exactly how to move forward and get back to you as quickly as possible on it. The goal was to give folks about a month, a little less than a month, to fill out the survey. We were planning on closing off the survey after December 4th. That was the planned e-bike demo ride and one of the opportunities the district would take to actually be out on in some of the recreation areas and be collecting surveys. That was the original proposed date. Again, maybe this shifts a little bit based on your input, but we'll continue to discuss that. That would give us a little less than a week to process the results, and then ultimately, the goal is to bring something back to you on December 10th so that you have a better understanding of what many of the recreation users out there are thinking. Sean or Crystal.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I think, but what I heard tonight was generally folks on the committee felt that a live survey was preferable than an online survey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I heard, go ahead, Sean.
Oh, I was just going to add, you know, the next agenda or the next meeting that we're having is really about how user groups are interacting. And that's kind of a difficult question to get to. We've gotten some suggestions from folks on, you know, different groups that we could bring in. But if you think about that, if we're bringing one group in to provide their perspective, you know, that's not giving you everyone's perspective. So
that's,
if you have other thoughts on how we can collect a broad array of positions on this, let us know.
I think.
Yeah, go ahead, Debbie.
That was actually a very helpful reminder, because I kept thinking, why the survey? What is the purpose of it? But that, to me, is very compelling in terms of thinking about how we do address that sticky issue next week. Not that it's going to be definitive, statistical, defensible. It's another data point in the discussion. So just to be clear again on what the ask is, you want us to edit, give edits to the survey and give comments on whether or not the whether and the how of the survey, whether or not we think there should be a survey and how it should go out Are those you want from us?
Feel free to send any information regarding the survey you'd like to. Immediately following this meeting, I'll get it out to all of you in Word. And just get whatever input you have on it, whether it's general comments or specific edits, back to me by the close of business on Thursday. Okay.
Just a point on the chronology of these things. If the e-bike demo is on December 4th,
yes,
and you close out the survey on December 4th,
yes,
then question, have you ever ridden an e-bike, would be kind of a moot point. You're excluding people who potentially would ride
the administration.
Clarify, though, the e-bike demo is only for the CAC members.
Right.
It's not a broad public demo.
Okay.
This is just for these members, because if you're making recommendations based on e-bikes, some of the comments we've received are you should probably have tried an e-bike. So that's what we're giving you all the opportunity to do.
Right.
The closing of the survey would be after that activity. Survey would occur while you are demoing e-bikes as well.
Okay.
And then just in regards to time, you know, we do have a number of public comments. Can we just check, Charisse, how many comments we got? Seven?
Seven. Perfect.
Okay. So why don't you close up, Sam, and then we'll move on to the public comment.
I believe that was actually the last slide. So thank you all. As I said, I'll get the document out to everybody. Please do take a look for it and make modifications as quickly as possible. At this point, we do want to go ahead and switch over to public comment.
And anybody have any last-minute comment cards that you want to throw in the pot? We've got seven right now.
Yeah. Could I ask a real quick question? How many people here have an e-bike?
Here's your pen.
Oh.
How many people in here have ridden an e-bike?
Quite a few. Thank you.
Okay, we're getting in some more comment cards here. We're going to total them up and look at how much time we have left to determine how much speaking time each person can have, and we'll set the timer that's appropriate. We'll let you know in just a moment.
Now it's true.
You know how to reset it? Okay. Yeah, how many? Yeah, so 1 minute,
I'll make,
I think,
I'll
is appropriate.
First, maybe.
A very high, a grand majority, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like we're going to, in order to keep on our time schedule and everybody's, you know, to be mindful of that, it looks like we're going to have to restrict public comment to 1 minute per person. So we've got a little timer on the podium. It goes red, it goes green, yellow, then red, and then if you go over time, it starts blinking red. There's no hook or buzzer, but you might want to keep your eye on the color of the lights.
So Crystal, will you read names off?
All right, first up we have Larry Minicus.
Thank you. One minute for comment is not appropriate. It simply isn't. It just to hit 8 o'clock. I've never been at a meeting where there's been less than 2 minutes. My first complaint is that there was no agenda put out. The agenda, you received the agenda on the 8th. We did not see an agenda. You got documents that we did not see. And then this document was handed out as if it's science. And I'd like to know why it was handed out, because it's a highly biased document that we have dealt with for years with the state, with the county, and with MMWD on these studies. And these studies all come to the same conclusion. And that conclusion is you cannot use these studies to determine impacts in other areas except where we did the study. These are site-specific studies. And they each say more study must be done. And when you really read into this, if you go to the bottom of page 6, in the middle of this document, it says very clearly, while land managers have long been concerned about the environmental impacts of mountain biking, there are still very few good studies published in peer review journals. As a consequence, the ecological effects of mountain biking on trails and natural resources remains poorly understood. There is no understanding of these impacts. We cannot draw conclusions. And even though this is supposed to be for the next meeting, it was a flaw to hand it out at this meeting, because immediately Bill went to, oh, look, in Kentucky, 3,000 miles away, hoof prints are having more impact than bicycles are. The handing out biased information that's incomplete is not a way to inform this group or to inform the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you. For everybody's information, we do have an e-bike committee webpage on our website that has the ability to sign up to be emailed the agenda when it's posted. The agenda was duly posted in accordance with the Brown Act on November 8th to allow three or more board members to attend and listen in on the proceedings. So feel free to go online and sign up, and you will get the agenda as when it's posted. Just to clarify, what Larry just showed me was there's actually one posting that is just a generic agenda that allows the board members to attend. And on that agenda, there's a hyperlink. If you click that, it takes you to the committee website or web page where you can sign up to get the detailed agenda. So there's a second agenda that's more detailed on the e-bike committee web page. Okay, next we have Tom Boss. And then we can line up for expediency. Larry Stratton is after Tom.
Just a couple of suggestions on the survey. I like the idea that it just be done on the watershed. I think that's a good idea. As we have learned from other surveys on mountain biking, recreation use in general, mountain bikers don't tend to stop as often as people on foot. So it might be good to either factor that in or to do a separate user count in tandem with the user survey so that you know, well, 30 bikers came by, but only, you know, two participated, or vice versa, just so you know roughly if you really captured a pretty good array of folks. And then additional, I think it might be good to do additional or mini, two or three locations. A couple of thoughts are West Point Inn, Phoenix Lake, Deer Park, and then Alpine Dam is another popular destination for recreationalists. And that's it. Thanks.
Okay, Larry Stratton. And then David Jacobson.
Good evening. I'm a Fairfax resident for the past 30 years.
Could you use the microphone, please?
For the last 30 years, my family and I have enjoyed the hiking and bicycling on the Rin District watershed lands. I applaud the district's efforts in keeping hiking trails free from bicycles. I don't agree with the district's intention to prohibit Class 1 e-bikes from the fire protection roads, however. This plan unduly restricts access to the lands by people who may not be able to access them otherwise. It seems to me that roads are made for vehicles and trails are created for pedestrians, in this case, hikers. In 2017, while hiking on Mount Tam, I suffered a major stroke. Fortunately, due to timely surgical intervention facilitated by the rapid response of an MMWD ranger and others, I was able to regain my mobility on my left side, which was paralyzed by a clot to the brain. Since that time, it's been an ongoing challenge to regain my strength. I simply did not have the stamina to return to mountain biking on the fire roads. In 2018, I got a Class 1 e-bike, which allows me to access the mountain by assisting me in the sections where the grades are more than I could otherwise handle. I fail to see how anyone could think that a device helping someone up the hill would be a problem. It is helping me regain my health and my stamina. I can once again enjoy the beauty of the district lands, and most importantly, it has helped me regain a more positive outlook on life. By prohibiting e-bikes on the fire roads, other members of the public who have health challenges may also be denied these benefits.
Thank you very much. Okay, David Jacobson and then Daniel Cressman.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Two topics, one on the survey. I was a statistics major in college, and one of the things I learned is proper population. So the proposal is to have a survey of people who would comment on e-bikes, but e-bikes currently are illegal in Water District land. So in theory, there's nobody there to comment. So it possibly would skew the results. So that's item one. And item two is to just throw an idea in for consideration. I think this is a great group. I've been a hiker on the mountain for 50 years. Eagle Scout. Now I'm an e-biker because I got hit by a car and I have medical issues. And so it's helped me to get more social opportunity. I'm sure you've heard this from many people. One idea I've seen other places is ideas to do trials. Richmond Bridge is going to do a 4-year trial that starts this weekend. Mount Tahoe has done some of this. Others have experimented with odd days as a way to experiment. So odd days are for bikes and even days are for pedestrians. And maybe we see, hey, what happens? Try it for a year, try it for 2 days on odd days, and just let people come back after that. And then you'll have a population of e-bikers who could comment and give you accurate survey results. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Daniel Cressman, followed by Tad Jacobs.
Hi, my name is Daniel Cressman. I live in Mill Valley. I've been a rate payer for 35 years for MMWD. And I'm a e-biker. I'm a supporter. I like what Bill said as well. I used to work for the National Park Service in Canada. I was a park warden up there for 5 years. And my background, my degree is in range and wildland science. But while I've been riding for 35 years a mountain bike in Marin County, the Marin Headlands, I've been an e-biker for 2 years, and I put on over 3,000 miles on my e-bike on these hills and trails. And one thing to consider, for every e-biker that's out there that wouldn't normally be on that mountain or in MMWD land, that's another set of eyes and ears that will help the land managers for public safety if someone has a problem, in your case, or fires or whatever. There's additional people. You know, you can deputize these people if you want. So it's just something to consider. But I'm a big supporter of it. Thanks.
Thank you. Tad Jacobs, followed by either Larry or Gary Kushner. Larry Kushner. So Tad Jacobs.
Hello. My name is Tad Jacobs. I'm Marin County native of 55 years. We have horses, we hike, and we bike in our family. So we all use all three, and I want to thank you very much for keeping the mountain open for all of us. We appreciate that. But these discussions remind me a lot of the discussions that happened in the 80s when mountain biking was going to be banned on the mountain. We weren't going to have any mountain left if there was mountain bikes, and they've been up there for, 35, 40 years, and it seems like we still have a mountain. So I'd like you to consider that when looking at this. I know search and rescue and other rangers are using e-bikes on the mountain with great success and have found them to be very helpful. With regards to fire safety, cars and motorcycles have got batteries and gasoline in them, and they drive on the roads up the mountain. We've never had any huge wildland fire with results from those, and they carry a lot more fuel than an e-bike battery. Just like you to give that some consideration. And I just ask for those of you that haven't ridden an e-bike to please join on that December 4th ride, so at least you'll have that firsthand experience of riding an e-bike. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Larry Kushner, followed by Matt Adams.
I started my own e-bike advocacy and educational group.
If you could use the microphone, please.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I started my own advocacy and educational e-bike thing 2 years ago in June of 18, actually. And I made presentations to the board here and their staff last year. What's going on now nationally and around the areas, and I just wanted to give you some updates. The Department of Interior just issued an order in the next 30 days that all agencies under their guise is to figure out a way to show that all e-bikes are allowed wherever a bicycle is allowed. That's on the books. It's going to happen now, and there's no getting around it. So it's moving forward. Also, talk about studies. There's a lot of studies going on up in the Lake Tahoe area about erosion and things like that. And National Forest Service in South Lake Tahoe issued this notice on the 23rd of November, of October. As of the 2019 field season winds to a close, the Tahoe National Forest would like to share an update on Class 1 pedal-assisted bikes. No observed increase in trail degradation nor resource damage occurred as a result of e-bike. No trail conflicts were reported or observed. There were no reported accidents or injuries due to e-bike. Tahoe National Forest recreation managers did observe an increase of usage and no problems.
Thank you.
There's a lot of things going on that are changing the look at this. Also, 1096, you mentioned, just want to say this real quick. The legislative analyst came out with an edict saying that all e-bikes should be allowed where regular bicycles are, and the law is going to be changed.
Thank you.
There's
thank
an
you.
Address. Thank you.
Matt Adams, followed by Andrea DeRocklin. DeRocky.
Hello, everybody. My name is Matt Adams. I'm the president of Mike's Bikes, a company based here in Marin County. I grew up in San Rafael and currently live in Fairfax. Two things that I would like to bring up, I guess, the specifically around Class 1 e-bikes. We keep hearing 20 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour. It's very difficult to ride an e-bike at 20 miles an hour. That's just the max at where the speed cuts off. So I don't want people to think that there's bikes zipping around Mount Tam at 20 miles an hour all the time. Second of all, I feel that the motor electronic system on a bike is just another piece of technology to make the same sport, the same experience more fun and more accessible. It's not a different experience. It's not a different sport. It's not a different anything other than just making riding bikes up on the mountain more fun and more accessible to more people. So thank you.
Thank you. Andrea, followed by Chuck Beal.
Hi, I've been a runner, biker, and hiker in our family for 25, 30 years around here. And I wanted to say that my husband got sick about 8 years ago. And I know you've probably heard many stories like this, but he was completely unable to really exercise beyond just walking out our local bike path. And after he got his e-bike a month ago, he started biking again, which is really been a wonderful thing and exactly what his doctor prescribed, but he hasn't really been able to do well enough to do. So it's really been a lovely thing. I'm also a social worker. I work with young adults who have autism, and I also have a son who has autism. And one of the things that has been lovely is to be able to start getting them on e-bikes. And part of why that's been so helpful is that as a group, they don't have a lot of perseverance. So going up the hills, they're all complaining vigorously about, but if we give them a little boost, they've been able to enjoy it and actually be out in the park, which, you know, and go up to Phoenix Lake, which they haven't been able to do before. So it's been a lovely experience for everybody. And the last thing I wanted to say is that that last question on the survey with the in the grid, it seems very biased about negative things. That so if that can be changed to more neutral language, I think that might get more useful information. Thank you.
Thank you. Chuck Beal, followed by Eric Miller.
Hello, my name is Chuck. I just wanted to say thank you. First off, our water is great, so we really appreciate you guys having that at the forefront. Thank you. I just want to remind everyone that we're really talking about bikes versus e-bikes. This is not a discussion on whether we're allowing bikes or not. It's just kind of the mode of transportation of that bike. So things like erosion and safety are two of the top ones that come up. It reminds me a little bit of allowing trails that you can run on versus walk on, because really it's the same activity. It's just really the pace at which that happens. So I think really erosion and safety are the top two that come up for me. Erosion outside of the Tahoe thing that I just heard, I didn't know there was any studies on. But safety, I think, should be the number one concern for those of us who are walking or not e-biking or et cetera, et cetera. And I think we should focus on monitoring speed, not the way we get there. Many of us can ride downhill just as fast as we can with or without a motor. So I just wanted to share that with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Eric Miller, followed by Mark Gabbard.
Hi, I'm Eric Miller. I live in Larkspur. I'm one of these people that are older now, and I got an e-bike, and it's allowed me to get back on the mountain and really enjoy it. One of the committee members here said that tonight or here we're considering a new use, and it's not a new use at all. It's the same use. My e-bike, the difference between me riding my e-bike on the mountain and my old mountain bike on the mountain is no difference at all, with the exception that when I go up a hill, for the most part, I can go up the hill without having to walk half of it, and it allows me to get on the mountain. I'm very supportive of allowing e-bikes on the mountain. I haven't seen people racing around and the things that people worry about on the mountain. And I support this effort. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark Gabbard, followed by John Hermansky.
Hi, I'm glad you were able to read my handwriting. Hi, I'm Mark Gabbard, San Rafael. I've lived in Marin for 14 years. I've been an avid biker for 20. and an e-biker for actually the last 3 years. I really consider it a privilege. I'm not from Marin originally, to actually be able to enjoy these beautiful trails. And, you know, I have a medical condition that I was born with, and actually this has helped me considerably enjoy the trails going to the top of Mount Tam, which, you know, on my regular acoustic bike would have taken me quite a long time. So it's really opened up a ton of opportunity for me, and actually be able to hang out with my friends. And, you know, as we age too, everybody is basically saying that my group, I'm the only e-biker, actually there are two now, are basically saying this will probably be an inevitable way for them to continue to actually ride their bike and enjoy the sport in Marin. So in conclusion, just want to say, you know, the e-bike is more riding, more fun, and less cars. So that's always a great thing. And I hope you consider this when you hopefully rule that Cat 1 e-biking should be allowed. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. John Hermansky, followed by Ann Engert.
I'm John Hermansky, and I live in San Anselmo. And among other people, I've been hiking on Mount Tam for, you know, 30 years or whatever. We can include e-bikes with regular, may I say, dirt bikes. I'm not worried about a distinction if they're battery powered or not. I think the concern has always been bicycles using single track trails. Once in a while, you can have it. You know, it has to be hammered out quite a bit. But I think I do see evidence of bicycles using single track trails on the north side and on the south side. So I think that's always something that has to be watched out for. And yes, it does require more enforcement. I know maybe we're shorthanded on rangers or whatever, but I think that'll always be an issue. And the use of e-bikes could intensify this. Thank you.
Thank you. Ann Engert, and then the last card I have here is a gentleman, I believe John wrote on the back of the card that's distinguishable here. So.
Hi, I'm Ann Engert. I have a back surgery. I've been biking for 30 years. I have the same group of women. We go every Friday, so if you want to see more women on the trail, come out Friday, and you're all welcome to join us. For 25 years, we've been biking. After my surgery, I stopped biking for 2 years, and that really was devastating for me. That was my social world every Friday with that group of women, and to get the e-bike has really saved my life, I have to say. I mean, just getting out into nature. I'm a nature lover, and that's why I like to be out and be out with my friends, and I'm not sure what the biggest objection, my perception of people who don't want e-bikes, is they just have a fear that there's all these speed demons that are going to be unsafe. And if you come out, it really is us older people who can't keep up anymore. I mean, you've heard it here again and again. There aren't speed demons out there on e-bikes. I have never seen it yet. I do see some speed demons on regular bikes. They're very young. I always think they must come here from the city because they're not respecting our trails. So Marin County residents are just like me who ride the e-bike, and I actually go slower than I used to go on a regular bike, so thanks.
Okay, thank you. I believe it's John, and then followed by Kim.
Hi, just a few brief words. My brother's credited as being one of the founders of mountain biking. We grew up in Larkspur, Baltimore Canyon. And I'm the guy who drove them to the top of the mountain so they could ride down. Nobody brought their bike uphill because it's too steep. That was many, many years ago. We also want to thank the MMWD for leaving their keys at one of the gates, allowed us to open the gates to get through and to get down for about 15 years. At death. Anyway, speed issue. Remember, it's 15 miles per hour up there. There are hardly any signs up there. I only know of three. There's also signs that's 10 and 5. I'm not sure what the distinction is. It should be all over, more of them. Also, the biggest thing in terms of safety is staying on the right side of the road. People don't understand it's like a street where you have to stay to the right. The other day, happening three times, people walking, they were right in front of me on a blind corner. One girl was texting with a dog off a leash, and I wasn't speeding. That's, again, a sign issue. And those signs are in the state parks, by the way. I can show you some. Weight. They're talking about what is an e-bike? Well, e-bike is exactly the same as a mountain bike, except it's got 23 pounds more weight. It's got a battery, that's 9 pounds, and it's got a motor, about 13. Otherwise, they're the same. Tire widths are the same. 2.5 inches is the new standard. The old ones were 2.1, somewhere in between. Exactly the same vehicle. So you got to get rid of this distinction. The speed thing, again, it's posted. You can't do that. Now, I happen to ride in a place where it's single track, blind corners, and bi-directional, your worst thing. So what do they recommend? This. These are free. You put those on your bike when you get on the way up, and when you come down, you put them in a little box or put $5 in and keep them like I did. The other day I was going up there, and I came to a blind corner. I was going uphill on an e-bike. The guy was coming down. E-bikes are allowed. He was going downhill. I could hear him, and I knew, had I not heard him, I would have come to the top of that thing, and the two of us would have met. Single tracks are only this wide. They're not wide enough for two bikes. They do allow bi-directional. So those issues occur. I've seen around Lagunitas Lake is the biggest problem there, where you have the corners, and you have people hiking, biking either direction. But some people don't like this. I just, if when I go by, I just say, ice cream is on its way.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Kim.
Good evening. Thank you. Everyone's saying e-bikes are the same as a bike. A vehicle.
Can you use the mic?
People are saying e-bikes are the same as a bike. A motorized vehicle is a different than something that's not motorized. So that is to be debated. But should we choose to use e-bikes, which I'm not sure we should, I'm concerned of the increased mileage that people will be using and the more significant wear and tear on the trails. Where, you know, do we have the manpower to take care of that? I'm also concerned about the increased use. I hear lots of people tonight saying how helpful it is, and that's great. I also hike the bike path by Sausalito Bike Trail, and there are so many tourists, hundreds, renting bikes. That's something we need to look at. Hundreds, thousands of international tourists renting the e-bikes out on those trails. Do we have the manpower for that? So if the decision is made to allow them, I hope that we will consider those and factor those things in. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so that was it for the cards. Did we miss anyone? Seeing going once, going twice. Okay, great. Sam, back to you.
Okay, thank you very much. And thank you all for attending this evening. In the future, we'll have some additional seating out to make sure. Obviously, there's a lot of people interested in this topic, so we'll make sure to get some additional seating. Just a quick reminder to the group, again, please do make edits and changes to the survey, along with additional comments you have on the general topic. As soon as you see that email come from me, we'd really appreciate it. The sooner you finish it up, the sooner we can actually start moving forward. That's all I had for the evening. Let me just look to Sean and see if there were any final comments.
Where's the ice cream?
Jonathan.
Could we get the minutes from the last meetings before the meetings start?
Yes, so they were posted last week, and everybody received an email with the link. So we'll resend it out so you can see the minutes.
Okay. I think that I tried the download. It didn't work. I think it might be special because I have a Macintosh, okay. But then you sent me the link. So, that's the only thing I would want to get.
Okay.
All the information possible.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. All right. We'll follow up with an email with any additional kind of outcomes from the meeting, but thank you all, and we'll see you at a minimum, hopefully on December 4th, for the demo ride. Thank you.
Nona?
Thanks, Larry.
Be there. Be there or be square.